When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome one, welcome all to the Court of the Trashy Royals, where we assemble each week to reveal and revel in the tales of our betters behaving badly. My name is Stacy.
Alicia here, friends. Thank you for joining us today for this next trashy ride of Naughty Nobles.
What are you bringing us today, Alicia?
One of my favorite stories, with a twist and another twist. It's a little like Shakespeare. Before I roll into the setup and the prologue, so to speak, let's take a moment to give a few shout-outs to our latest supporters getting early ad-free episodes over at patreon.com/trashyroyalspodcast.
Huge love and thanks to Martha P., Amanda P., Daphne W., Alyssa A., Emily R., and Megan S.
Holy cats, new and sustaining patrons, we cannot thank you enough for showing some $2 a month love to our endeavors here. I do want to give a grand welcome into this episode. Big thanks to all of you tuning in for new and returning folks. Stacy, to go back and answer your question, today I got something. It's one of my favorite stories, and I want to pose a question to you.
Okay.
From our last episode about Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn and all of his love letters, if Henry VIII did all of that for his wannabe honey Anne Boleyn, before she finally broke down and had no choice, what would a lover for their daughter do? Elizabeth I, said daughter of Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn, had a man. Before he was a man, he was a puppy boy. If you tuned into the William Shakespeare controversy episode this past Sunday in the bonus drop, you would know we call Robert Dudley puppy boy around here. She's had him locked in since childhood. Their story is one for the ages. Elizabeth and Leicester, although it does come with some complications. You could almost say that it was Shakespearean in all of its unfolding. What is tossed into this tragedy? At its core, it is a love story, a faded one, but one that will not lead to much happiness. As in Tudor England, all of the complications of the past are always present. Included in this twisty story, we have a love affair, executions on the Tower Green, competing families at court, secret affairs, religious strife, and some assassination plots, too. Ultimately, though, it is the fate of lovers that can never be. Let us anon to Elizabeth and Leicester, Part 1.
Alicia, I feel like I should have a big sheet of sheet metal to shake around and make thunder noises to bring us into the story.
That's exactly right. We're back at the Globe Theater. We're going to open this story in the year 1532, when Robert Dudley is born, June 24th, 1532. When I say Leicester, Robert Dudley will become the Earl of Leicester. That's not until part two.
Sure.
Little Robert, Bobby, when he's born, is the fifth child of John Dudley. Robert's number 5 out of 13 in this particular Dudley line.
Baker's dozen.
Holy cats. The Dudleys.
Props to his mom.
There are some things you want to know about the Dudley family. They are big players at court in a lot of ways through the centuries. In the time frame we're playing with today and even going back many, many decades. The Dudleys are one of the most powerful Protestant factions at court during the time of Henry VIII. This is going to matter for a lot of reasons, mostly being the king is going to forget about Catholicism and embrace an alternative religion so he can be the boss of everything, including Anne.
Sure.
It's always going to matter from a certain point which side of the line you're on, Catholic or Protestant. Who are you lining up with? So before John Dudley, Daddy Dudley, Robert's father, is the biggest Protestant supporter of Henry VIII, I need to back up just a little bit more. The Dudley family, big deal. Robert Dudley's grandfather, Granddaddy Dudley, so to speak, his name is Edmund. Edmund was a huge deal in the administration of Henry VIII's father, Henry VII. Edmund Dudley was Henry VII's finance guy, which maybe isn't the greatest thing to be in 1509 when Henry VII dies. And a young Henry VIII attains power at the age of 18, and Edmund Dudley, without a whole lot of popularity, because Henry VII and his financial things are a thing, another story for another day, but Henry VIII, all around this time, doesn't really love his dad's finance minister, also has the desire to gain Edmund Dudley's lands and wealth. Henry VIII sees Edmund Dudley as a threat. And if you're a threat to Henry VIII, you gotta go, 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 so to speak. This is not the last of the executions from Henry VIII. He's really just warming up right now. Edmund Dudley, friend and ally of Henry VII, is executed within the Tower of London in August of 1510. He's not the only one. He's slung up alongside this guy named Richard Empson. They are both accused and executed for treason because Henry VIII is very, very sensitive in the first and last years of his reign. Bit of a fun fact about Dudley and Empson, though, if you can call a beheading a fun fact, there's some early tales that connect the nursery rhyme of Jack and Jill to this particular event in history. Jack and Jill would be Dudley and Empson rolling down the hill. Oh, very early legends.
Their heads.
Yes, rolling. Went up the hill. And yes, isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of ways that nursery rhyme could be compelled, but that is one of the earliest origin stories. It is about the execution of Grandpa Dudley. Time moves on. And Henry VIII is ruling. And now Edmund Dudley's son, John Dudley, by the time we make it to 1532, has worked tirelessly to redeem the Dudley family name at court, right? His father was executed for treason to the king, and it's the king that's still on the throne.
Okay, but the problem probably is that Granddad Dudley had a finance post to the King of England at the time, and I'm sure that was a very lucrative position for him to be in. Like, Henry knew that at the end of the day, what he really wanted was all that the guy had earned. And right, like...
Certainly.
Yeah.
These are more complicated stories.
Treason is just another way of saying, like, hey, I want to take your stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct. Ding, ding, ding.
I'll be taking your stuff now.
Do you want your head or do you not? Mostly I'm going to take your head, too, with your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Henry VIII, he is a character.
Not a rule of law guy.
Unless he's making up the laws.
Yeah.
Which he does a lot. So you can imagine here, John Dudley has done everything. Whatever you say, Henry VIII, you want me to be a Protestant? Great. 100% Protestant, yep. Where do I sign up? Now, little John Dudley is very young when Henry VIII comes into power. John Dudley was born in 1504. He is a full 15 years younger than Henry VIII. So he's a child when all this happens, but John, every day of his whole life, doesn't have it easy. He becomes a ward of the court after the execution of his father. So John Dudley, by the age of 7 in 1512, is a ward of the court. John is sent into the home of Sir Edward Guildford. Remember that name. the trade-off for John going to Sir Edward Guilford, because nobody's mad at, like, young John. He's a kid, you know? John goes to Edward Guilford's house in exchange for getting Edmund Dudley's lands and titles restored to the family. Now Henry's had a little bit of time to cool off, right? Like, maybe that was a little hasty. I can't leave this family of all these kids destitute and all their lineage, so...
Well, and he needs allies, and, you know, there's... So I hear there's some fence mending on both sides here.
Exactly. So John Dudley is going to get his family lands restored. There are a few trade-offs, but he goes to Edward Guilford's house. Henry VIII isn't mad at John Dudley's mother. Her name is Elizabeth Grey. And Elizabeth Grey, remember that last name, relative by marriage through Henry's line a thousand ways. And Henry doesn't have anything against her kids. So here's little John Dudley. He gets his little Paddington Bear coat. If found, please return me to Edward Guilford. He's going to make it happen. Working his way up in court, working in all the ways he can, getting into favor. He's aligned to everything Henry wants. This is before and after John's marriage to Jane Guildford, the daughter of his patron ward keeper. Jane is the mother of John Dudley's 13 kids, including the mother of Robert Dudley being the fifth of those 13. By 1532, when Robert Dudley is born, John Dudley, his dad, restored. John Dudley is a complete and total supporter of Anne Boleyn at Henry's court. Catherine of Aragon, Henry's first wife, is exiled into cold, wet Wales. Anne Boleyn in 1532 is about to be headed to her first wedding in Calais in November of 1532.
I like that you said that she's about to be headed.
Yeah. That's going to lead to the consummation of Henry and Anne and the beginning of Elizabeth, which calls for a formal marriage back in England in January of 1533. Catherine of Aragon, who remembers her? And this consummation, first wedding, second wedding, leads to the coming of our fair Elizabeth in September of 1533. Baby Elizabeth, princess, is born. Our two lovers in the scene. Robert Dudley, though, is about to be an older brother. Number six of the Dudley line, this kid's name is Guildford. I want you to remember that. It will be important. So here we have John Dudley, Robert's father. He is Anne Boleyn's ally in 1532. And this all goes great until it doesn't. John is fighting a lot of battles. He's working for Henry VIII outside of England during much of his youth. Right up to the Anne Boleyn time frame, John is a major player. He's rising, redeeming the Dudley line for grace and favor with Henry VIII, right-hand man. This is a terrific time to take a very quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Robert and Elizabeth together as children.
We will see you on the flip.
Hi, I'm Chris Gethard, and I'm very excited to tell you about Beautiful Anonymous, a podcast where I talk to random people on the phone. I tweet out a phone number, thousands of people try to call. Talk to one of them, they stay anonymous. I can't hang up. That's all the rules. I never know what's going to happen. We get serious ones. I've talked with meth dealers on their way to prison. I've talked to people who survived mass shootings. Crazy funny ones. I talked to a guy with a goose laugh. Somebody who dresses up as a pirate on the weekends. I never know what's going to happen. It's a great show. Subscribe today. Beautiful Anonymous. Hi, I'm Chris Gethard, and I'm very excited to tell you about Beautiful Anonymous, a podcast where I talk to random people on the phone. I tweet out a phone number. Thousands of people try to call. Talk to one of them, they stay anonymous. I can't hang up. That's all the rules. I never know what's going to happen. We get serious ones. I've talked with meth dealers on their way to prison. I've talked to people who survived mass shootings. Crazy funny ones. I talked to a guy with a goose laugh. Somebody who dresses up as a pirate on the weekends. I never know what's going to happen. It's a great show. Subscribe today. Beautiful Anonymous.
Ah, our love story. It's going to be passed down like folklore, these two. So John Dudley being in court with Anne Boleyn, as a result of this being Henry's right-hand man, Robert and Elizabeth, the lady princess, grow up together. Everybody's at court. Robert and Elizabeth are playmates. Mm-hmm. They're friends from an early age. They are a year and 2 months apart. They share nurseries and tutors. The women of the courts really is the most interesting part about how the court is connected for me. Robert's mother, Jane, is a lady in Anne Boleyn's court, heavily in the Protestant faction. Sweet, tiny Elizabeth is 2.5 years old when her mother is murdered. I said it.
Mm-hmm.
No, and it's correct. Really did not get the better end of that. And her daughter, Elizabeth, is a very smart child and realizes in one day something has happened. Why was I a princess yesterday and today I'm a lady? Because everything changes for Elizabeth at this point. Her father, Henry VIII, has bastardized-ish Elizabeth because Henry has the nerve to divorce Anne Boleyn before he kills her. So Robert grows up in the court with Elizabeth. They're the same age. They're best friends. They're, I don't know, maybe twin flames if you're into that sort of thing. These two are connected. By the age of 8 years old, Robert recalls that Lady Elizabeth has said to him that she will never, never marry. Now, can you blame her? Look at the example she has.
Yeah.
Her mother was murdered. Her next stepmother, Jane Seymour, dies shortly after childbirth. Her next stepmother, Anne of Cleves, divorced her father and is like her very favorite aunt the whole world. And then poor Catherine Howard, her mother's cousin, so part of her family and faction. Elizabeth, looking at that stepmother, that's 1542, when Catherine Howard's beheaded by her father. Let's pretend Anne Boleyn was 9 when she told Robert Dudley at 10 that she would never marry. Who could blame her? I can imagine there's not a lot about being a girl that Elizabeth is looking too much forward to from a very early age. 1542 and Elizabeth, my dad is 5 wives down. I would never marry 2. I see where marriage and childbirth get women in this world, which is nowhere. Who's hearing all of Elizabeth when she's young? It's Robert Dudley, her very best friend, and they're aligned. You know this about me, Stacey. Listeners, I have an entire Taylor Swift soundscape set to 1413 England to 1604. My song for Robert Dudley and Elizabeth as children, I want you to think about the song 7 from the Folklore album by Taylor Swift. Just going to do a few quick little lines and stanzas here to unpack this just a little bit. I can't help but think of Robert Dudley when I hear this song. Please picture me in the trees. I hit my peak at 7. In the swing over the creek, I was too scared to jump in. Are there still beautiful things? Sweet tea in the summer. Cross your heart, won't tell no other. And though I can't recall your face, I still got love for you. Your braids like a pattern. Love you to the moon and Saturn. These two, when you put their natal charts together, Elizabeth and Lester, holy cats. They would have been an incredible team. It's really the second verse that I can see little Robert singing to Elizabeth. It stuns me every time. And I've been meaning to tell you, I think your house is haunted. Your dad is always mad. And that must be why. I think you should come live with me and we can be pirates. Then you won't have to cry or hide in a closet. And just like a folk song, our love will be passed along. I mean, it's too much. I don't ever get through this song without crying because I see it as Robert and Elizabeth.
It's nice of Taylor Swift to go back and reinterpret Tudor era songs.
I will die on this hill. I think she is the Shakespeare of the 21st century. I get as excited about the intricacies within the way she plays with lyrics, exactly just the same way I do with Shakespeare. One last little stanza here. Pack your dolls in a sweater. We'll move to India forever. Passed down like folk songs. Our love lasts so long. Little puppy boy, he is down so bad for Elizabeth. And he's not even the master of the horse and hound yet. Like, his titles, Lester's coming. But here is children. Elizabeth can't do a thing for Robert. They just love each other. Robert is head over heels for Bessie since the age of whatever. And Elizabeth is adamant she will never, ever marry. They're BFFs, the two of them. Their childhood thing, love you to the moon and Saturn. It's folklore, and it will be passed down like folk songs. Their love lasts so long. I love this so much. Okay, next section. We progress. Let's get to the 1540s, and you know, it kind of is what it is. Robert Dudley and Elizabeth, they're growing up just fine. They're aligned. Henry VIII is alive, but not necessarily doing great. And when he dies, blessedly, in 1547, Edward VI is now king. This is Jane Seymour's son. Edward VI, child boy king, comes in overpassing Mary, Henry's daughter with Catherine of Aragon, and Elizabeth, who is now in the household of Henry VIII's widow, Catherine Parr. Eddie VI, he's our new king. He's a little kid. This is not going to go great. And with his tumultuous childhood, I mean, he's been around since 1537. He's seen a lot in his young years. And he is kind of a different story. From the beginning, because of Henry VIII's obsession with no things Catholic, Edward VI has been raised very super serious. He's into books. There's this tremendous responsibility placed on Edward VI very early in life from his father. You're the dynasty.
Yeah, you're the only son. This was marriage number three?
Marriage number three.
Yeah, so it took Henry a long time to have a son, although a legitimate son, I suppose.
Correct, because Henry Fitzroy, Henry's illegitimate son with Bessie Blount, passed away in the fall of 1536 after Henry beheaded Anne. All of that for naught. Here comes preteen king. Very serious. He doesn't know how to rule. He's a kid. He's going to need some help. Who's right there to help him?
Dudley's?
Yeah, John Dudley, as well as Eddie's uncles, the Seymour brothers. Stick around and you'll suddenly see more. So you have, essentially, John Dudley and the Seymour brothers, Edward and Thomas, all vying for power at court. Edward's a kid. He does not have a consort. There are no ladies in waiting. There are no female court things happening at the palace that really is the hub of how everything happens. That doesn't happen in Edward's court. It's just a lot of testosterone, all trying to make plays for power. A few things happening here with Fair Elizabeth and puppy boy Robert. Let's look at Elizabeth's side of the situation first. Henry VIII, her dad is always mad. Now he's not, because he's dead. And her last stepmother, Catherine Parr, has been in love with one of the Seymour brothers forever. Forever and ever. It is her destiny. Tommy. Tommy Seymour, who is the younger brother of the Seymour set. Edward is Tommy Seymour's older brother. Both Edward and Tommy Seymour are, guess who, brothers of Jane Seymour, mother of the king. John Dudley in the Dudley line and Eddie Seymour in the Seymour line are pretty much going to fight it out. And Tommy Seymour gets another plan here. He is a dirty, dirty dog. What does Tommy Seymour do? He will marry Catherine Parr, the widow of the king, with a quickness.
I'm guessing that the new king approves this. Is Don't you have to get permission and
oh yeah, nope, no. This is bad. No, it's very bad. Very bad. And Catherine Parr, who is a saintly woman, has married her lover. Mm-hmm. I mean, oh gosh, she's head over heels and is ignoring every red flag she can about Tommy Seymour. So Catherine and Tommy take in Elizabeth I into their household. And this is where Tommy Seymour will accost Elizabeth, come into her bedroom in the morning before she's dressed. She's a child, Elizabeth, 14, 15. Mm-hmm. Also, Catherine Parr is pregnant too. That whole story is coming, but I mention it here just to bring in the power plays of men. They're going to find it by hook or by crook, and it's typically through marriage. Thomas Seymour is not going to persist in being a problem, as Catherine Parr Seymour now dies after childbirth, and Tommy Seymour is going to lose his head in March of 1549, partly because of a bungled attempt at the kidnapping of his nephew, Edward VI, and also partly because of his lecherous acts towards Elizabeth. Tommy Seymour, even married to Catherine Parr, is trying to convince Elizabeth to marry him.
Yeah.
It's lecherous.
Yeah.
So at this point, Elizabeth is being kind of side-eyed by her brother, Edward VI. Like, what is your part in all of this? Like, blame the victim, right? Did you lead him on? What are you trying to set up? Are you trying to overthrow me?
Right. That's the constant paranoia of monarchs is someone else with a claim attempting to weasel in here? Yeah.
Exactly. So 1549, Tommy Seymour's out, which by 1550 leaves Edward Seymour and John Dudley kind of battling it out. But Eddie Seymour's now taken a pretty big hit with the downfall of the Seymour family, right? So it's huzzah, John Dudley, who comes out on top, who becomes and maintains the position of de facto ruler of England from 1550 to 1553. So 1550, life is great. And the Dudleys are a little bit redeemed. The stink of all Granddad Dudley's execution and traitorship has almost all worn off. And now John Dudley, Daddy Dudley, has the ability to power broker his kids' marriages. And that's what you do if you're in ascendancy at court. It's what you've always done. Let's bring another fair damsel into our story now, and that is the lovely Amy Robsart. Amy Robsart was born in the same year as her future husband, Robert Dudley, in 1532. Their birthdays are only separated by a few weeks. She's born June the 7th. Remember, he's June the 24th.
Nice of whoever to write that down, actually, because it's a girl and often...
You're not kidding.
They didn't bother. Okay.
Oh, but Amy's family, her mom and dad adore her. She's cherished, doted upon. Amy is the daughter of a wealthy landowner from Norfolk, and she grows up there with her parents in a very quiet country life, doted on and adored.
Calm suburban upbringing.
Totally. Amy's father has lands, but Amy's father doesn't have a title or much of anything in the larger court system. But Robert and Amy, by 1549, have found each other. They've kind of fallen for each other. They court for about a year and do appear to make a real love match. Amy's father owns some land. You could say that she is socially inferior to the Dudleys, but on the flip side of that, if you're John Dudley and looking at your fifth son, Robert, you want to marry him into some place with land because mm-hmm. you're not going to be able to pass that down to him.
Yeah.
How do I secure some largesse for kids who are further down the line because mm-hmm. I have 13 of
yeah,
them?
Yeah, you can't do a proper inheritance for 13 children unless you're like the king.
So you marry them into other families mm-hmm. with girls and that's how it all gets real confusing. At any rate, Amy and Robert are almost 18 and they want to get together. And on paper, it looks great. Both families are Protestant. The Dudleys are in ascendancy at court. By all accounts, everyone in this is thrilled. 3 days before Amy's 18th birthday, Amy and Robert marry at the Royal Palace of Sheen. Edward VI is in attendance. It is a big deal. Young love, they're the same age. Everything is gonna be bliss. In the wedding contract between Robert and Amy, dated May of 1550, there's a stipulation here that's going to become important to our story. In the marriage contract, everybody knows Robert wants the land. The land doesn't go to Robert. The land is always Amy's. She is set up to inherit her father's estate only after both of her parents' deaths. That's not normally how it happens. Sometimes it's after the death of your father. But here, Amy's father wants mother cared for as well. So until both of us go, y'all don't get anything. We'll take care of you. You can hang out on our land, help us out, and do the thing. But nothing goes to Amy until both parents have passed away. William Cecil, who is around at this time, remarks that the marriage between Amy and Robert is a carnal marriage, quote unquote. So it looks like it is a love match. The two really want to be together in one way or another. Another marriage is made at this time. A few marriages actually are made at this time with some more Dudley kids. I want to bring back in Mary Dudley, sister to Robert. Mary Dudley, who will be known as Lady Sydney, is the greatest lady contender for the Shakespeare authorship.
Mm-hmm.
Our Patreon folks got that episode as a little bonus after this weekend's surprise drop. Mary Dudley marries in 1551. Pretty much. I need you to know that any Dudley kid that's old enough to marry is going to get married in this time frame. John Dudley has things to do. And he is one of Edward VI's puppet masters. He and now Edward Seymour. John Dudley, Edward Seymour. They're both trying to puppet master the boy king. The point being, lots of powerful people representing the king. The Seymour and the Dudley factions going to fight. They all have a lot of feelings. Edward VI is not the healthiest kid you've ever seen. So maybe looking in response to some of the Seymour power grabs, Daddy Dudley has another eligible son, Guilford. Remember him? He's number 6 in line. In 1552, John Dudley attempts first to make an unsuccessful marriage alliance between Guilford to a girl named Margaret Clifford. Margaret Clifford, and why she would be important to John Dudley, is that Margaret Clifford is 7th in the line of succession. Margaret Clifford's father was like, nope, nope, nobody, not in my lifetime. But sure enough, there's another royal cousin. Her name is Lady Jane Grey. And she's even higher in the line of succession. And John Dudley's definitely going to make a power play and coerces Edward VI to change the order of succession to overlook Mary I, his Catholic sister, to go to Lady Jane Grey, his Protestant cousin.
Sure. She will become the 9 days queen.
That she will. So here we have Jane Grey and Guilford Dudley married. She's a teenager. She's just as scholarly. She doesn't like Guilford. She's a pawn in this whole power play game, too. However, in May of 1553, Edward VI dies. And now, John Dudley, with his son being married to Hay, who I just convinced Eddie to change the line of succession for, is pretty much going to be the guy to plot the 9 days queen war thing that happens.
Mm-hmm. Because it turns out that Mary, Princess Mary, is none too happy to have been skipped over. Is this...
Oh, no, no, no. Mary Tudor, Mary I, Bloody Mary, as she will come to be known as, Big Mad.
Yeah, it's the nickname you want.
Big Mad.
In history.
In my Taylor Swift lexicon, my song for Mary the First is Anti-Hero. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me. Mary the First is always the problem. Mary the First, upon hearing this, oh, you're going to put my cousin, Lady Jane Grey, on the throne. I want to tag back to who is Lady Jane Grey? How does she even get in the line? And this is going to go back to the episode before last, Stacey. We talked about Henry's younger sister, Mary, who goes to the French court, who marries the older king.
Who promptly dies.
Who promptly dies, which gets Mary Tudor what she wants, which is marriage to Charles Brandon. That's her pony boy. She's loved Charles Brandon forever. They get the king a little mad, but Mary Tudor and Charles Brandon have a very happy marriage, but only have girls. Lady Jane Grey is their granddaughter, which is how she gets slung up in the whole succession drama. Daddy Dudley has managed this arrangement of marriage, wants to put his now daughter-in-law, Lady Jane Grey, as queen. Again, Mary, after like the 9-day thing, not too great. Mary's pretty unhappy. That whole Warren saga, I will unpack at a later date. I just want to... We're here for Elizabeth and Leicester.
Right.
When Mary takes over from Lady Jane Grey, it is no surprise that John Dudley, Guilford Dudley, and Lady Jane Grey, and Robert Dudley are all locked up in the Tower. The Dudleys fall again. Everybody's imprisoned and sentenced to death. All that work for nothing, John Dudley, for nothing. It's a great time to take another break before we reconnect our lovers in the Tower of London.
We'll be right back.
Oh, can you imagine? All of it for naught. John Dudley and Guilford and Jane all are going to die. They are all executed. The Dudleys are traitors again. Now they're two generation traitors. The Dudleys are dirt in the name of England, and any bit of good that John Dudley has done in the last generation is now gone. And now in 1553, time is not going to let people forget quite as quickly as those long ago days of Granddaddy Dudley. So young Robert Dudley is all caught up in all of this, and he is imprisoned at the Tower of London from July 1553 to October 1554. It's a long time. Remember, Robert's married. His wife, Amy Robsart, is allowed to visit her husband in the Tower, which is nice.
She's very civilized.
Well, yeah, she's allowed to tarry with him on occasion. But there's also another pretty famous prisoner at the Tower at this time as well.
Would that be Lady Elizabeth?
Sure would be. Queen Mary's baby sister.
Got to get those claimants out of the way.
And Elizabeth has been locked up by her sister Mary. I'm the problem, it's me. Elizabeth is in the Tower for a whole other conspiracy. But needless to say, poor Liz, she's in the pokey, praying she doesn't get beheaded with the rest of them for Mary's perceived ideas and threats of being overthrown. Mary's a lot like her dad. Now, if Elizabeth's brother Edward had been suspicious of Elizabeth's behavior all the way back in 1549, it is nothing like how much Mary is suspicious about Elizabeth. Mary, famously Catholic. Elizabeth will ally with the Protestants. When Edward dies in 1553, both Mary and Elizabeth ride into London together. They're presenting a unified front, but that doesn't go too great for too long because Mary wants to get married to the most inappropriate groom in the whole world, Philip II of Spain. And Mary, after that, wants to return England to big-time Roman Catholic.
Yeah, I remember keeping in mind the Spanish Inquisition is a thing that has been going on for some time. Even Philip of Spain was like, Mary, you're a little too intense here, like burning people at the stake and stuff. Not great.
It's a lot. Not really so into it. So Mary comes in and every Protestant leader that was in Edward's court is now under scrutiny. Elizabeth, not Mary's favorite person, she becomes a focus for plots against her sister. Whether she participates in them or not,
yeah,
there are a lot of people who don't want Mary on the throne.
She's the imagined champion of the Protestant nobility.
That's exactly it. So pretty much Mary is going to put Elizabeth under house arrest for the next 5 years in one location or another. There's one particular rebellion. This happens in 1554. This is the Wyatt's Rebellion. This implicates Elizabeth directly. Most of the things, Elizabeth can go to Mary and be like, hey, let's pray some Catholic prayers. I'm on your side. I'm no threat to you. But this one sort of attaches Elizabeth in. So here Elizabeth is arrested and sent to the Tower of London on March 17th, 1544, which is Robert Dudley's lucky day. On her arrest in 1554, Elizabeth writes her sister, like, please ignore your evil persuasions that would persuade not one sister against another. I got no beef with you, Mary. But Mary has beef with Elizabeth. Elizabeth is imprisoned. Are you ready for how cold, cold baby ice this is? Elizabeth is comfortable enough. She's not necessarily like locked up in chains. She's allowed to go into the gardens and she's got four rooms for herself at the Tower. But those are the four rooms where her mother had spent her time before she was coronated and her mother spent her time before she was executed. Elizabeth can just look out her window and sure, see where her mom was beheaded and her stepmom was beheaded and all the other. And your dad is always mad, and that must be why. Let's run away and be pirates. So can you imagine Dudley, who's been in the Tower now 9 months since the summer of 1553, who comes in besides his childhood love in March of 1554? In like a lion, out like a lamb by May of 1554. But imagine those 2 months. Mary doesn't hold Elizabeth too long, as no evidence can be found against Elizabeth. But these 2 months in the Tower are springtime, powerful enough, passionate enough to reconnect our two lovers, Elizabeth and Robert Dudley. From the Reputation album, Delicate by Taylor Swift. This is a song I always think about, the reconnection of Dudley and Elizabeth in the Tower. You ready? This ain't for the best. My reputation's never been worse, so you must like me for me. We can't make any promises now, can we, babe? But you can make me a drink. One, two, three. Let's go, Beth. Yeah, right? Y'all, it's so much. It's really here. Think about, you're locked in the Tower. Both of you are certainly going to be beheaded.
Right, under threat of death, yeah.
Robert's father, brother, and sister-in-law have all been beheaded. What's Elizabeth seen in her life? Can you imagine the spark of how passionate that must be when they get back together? Can you imagine what must have been said? Robert's a married man, but what happens at this time in the Tower? Is it cool that I said all that? Is it chill that you're in my head? Because I know that it's delicate. Is it cool that I said all that? Is it too soon to do this yet? Because I know that it's delicate, isn't it? Isn't it? Isn't it? Oh, it's so much. It's so delicate, but the sparks are still there between these two, maybe more so than ever. So when Elizabeth gets sprung in May, it is off to another house arrest. This time she's headed to Hatfield House. And Elizabeth, bless her, she's laying low, so low, just trying to keep out of Mary's way, trying to stay alive. Please, no one involve me in your plots. Elizabeth here, her dress turns very stark. She is locked in a room reading and writing and studying all day. One of Elizabeth's favorite pastimes, she's such a word nerd because she knows six languages, is taking a foreign text, translating it into another foreign text, and then translating it into a different foreign text just to see how the words play together. What if Elizabeth I was a potential author of Shakespeare's plays? Anyway, I'm off track. Elizabeth trying to stay alive at Hatfield House. She is so close to the crown. And I need to let you know, honestly, that is the most dangerous job in England, is to be second in line. What happens to our other characters here? Dad, Guilford, Jane Grey, all axed. But Robert Dudley gets this magic reprieve. How does he get sprung from the tower? Amy Robsart's influence and her family connections. So when Robert Dudley gets sprung, Amy's family really supports the couple. Robert Dudley is getting the heck out of London. Not keeping him around, collecting no dust. Robert heads back to Norfolk, and the two of them are with Amy's parents. Remember that codicil in the wedding contract? Amy's father will pass away in 1554. Amy's mother passes away in 1557. So it is in 1557 that Robert Dudley now inherits a lot of land and wealth, married to his beautiful bride, Amy. All things are coming up roses. They're looking to live their own version of John Prine's Spanish pipe dream. Go into the country, build a little home, plant a garden, eat some peaches. Everything's gonna be great. Things have finally settled down for Robert and Amy. And everything should be great, but the thing to know is in England, when everything settles down and things get stable, is when the apple cart is going to turn over again. What happens the next year, November 1558?
Mary dies.
You bet she does. The queen is dead. Long live the queen. And here Elizabeth gets word at Hatfield House and says, "This is the Lord's doing, and it is glorious in our eyes. There is a new queen in town. And her name is Elizabeth the First." That's part one of Elizabeth and Leicester. Next week, we're going to follow up what happens after Elizabeth becomes queen and how does the rest of the story go for these tortured lovers.
I was reading the other night, a social media post prompted me to wonder whether when a monarch chooses a regnant name when they ascend to the throne, and it is the same as their birth name, does it count as a name change? And I think it does, actually. Anyway, in her own time, she was not Queen Elizabeth I. She was just Queen Elizabeth of England, because there had been no previous. I mean, there had been, actually, I think,
some technically queen, she's queen consorts. Elizabeth Regina.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she was not known.
Yeah, she just QE. Queen Elizabeth.
Sure. It was not until Queen Elizabeth II that assumed the throne that history books were sort of rewritten to clarify that she was the first.
Elizabeth will always be Bessie in my heart. Things are really going to get exciting when we come back for part two. I hope y'all liked part one. That's act one and act two of Elizabeth and Leicester. It is glorious in our eyes. Thank you one and all for tuning in. Oh, I love this story so much. We can't tell you how much we appreciate you for spending your time with us, for your kind ratings and your emails and your support on Patreon. Y'all are the very best.
Yep.
Keep your crown straightened on.
Polish up those thrones, friends.
Something like that.
I mean,
keep your eyes on the Dudleys and the Seymours.
Bessie polished up that throne for years before her time came.
It is literally amazing to me that she stayed alive long enough to attain the throne. Mm-hmm. All those stories and more coming for you next week. Thanks again, everybody. Until we meet again, keep it trashy. Not as trashy as it's about to be.
Bye.
Bye, y'all.